and welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest health research and world news. My wife, Sharon Brower, will be joining me today. Of course, this is Ted, and Austin is taking a few days off, well-needed rest with him and his family up in Georgia, so I doubt he's listening to the show. He's probably in the middle of driving his wife around to do last-minute Christmas shopping. So, Austin, if you are listening, have fun, bud. Relax. We got it at this end. Sharon, so good to have you on with me today.
Always, Ted. I'm just always excited. And, you know, Ted, it's really funny because the Christmas season is a joyous season, and we have to make a decision no matter what's going on in our lives if we want to, you know, be joyful or if we want, you know, to be negative or whatever. And later on I want to talk a little bit about that because I think a lot of people, you know, need a little bit of just something uplifting. I mean, because of the holiday season, and we talked about that earlier about the frequency, but yeah, I'm excited to be here.
Well, you know, the holiday seasons are one of the most depressing seasons in the year. In fact, some people believe the Christmas season is the most depressing season of the year because they don't have the loved ones they once had with them at home. They miss them, especially if those are the people that are having no hope through Christ Jesus. Then they're very, very, very despondent. In many cases, just absolutely downright depressed because they've lost loved ones. In fact, this morning, I got a call from Kevin Jordan, who's a good friend of ours, and I give you my condolences right now, Kevin. He's up in South Carolina. His mother-in-law died today at 10 o'clock. And so you guys lift him up in prayer and realize that this kind of stuff happens over the holidays. You know, people die over the holidays. People die near their birthdays. People die near special events. And so you have a tendency to always remember that person's death rather than the special event, which is no good. It really isn't any good. You have to realize that all things work together for God, who are called according to his purpose. And we have to always realize that sometimes when people start having really bad health problems, it's easier for them to go home to be with Jesus. I know, Sharon, when my dad died, oh gosh, back in 1984, he's been gone now for over 30 years, 33 years, he ended up having a stroke. His favorite thing to do was to play the accordion. And I remember my dad was old school. He was born in 1901. So when he died, he was like 83, almost 84 years old. And what was interesting about it is he basically loved playing the accordion. He started playing the accordion when he was like 50 years old. And I remember he used to go to Europe on a cruise ship. You know, he did that like 7 different times because a lot of people didn't like to fly back in the 70s and 60s. And I remember one time he entered a talent competition on the cruise ship. And he won first place. He had over 100 songs memorized on his accordion, like Blue Danube and The Skater's Waltz and all types of things like that. Brilliant, brilliant man. In fact, Harrison, my youngest son, has incredible piano playing skills that he picked up from his grandfather. So it's a real blessing to have that type of talent in the family. But I remember Dad used to go to the old folks' home. He was still fine. He was still completely lucid. He'd go to the old folks' home, he called it, and play for the old folks, Sharon, every single week and have a little concert for them because he loved to entertain them and they loved to have him come there. And he just basically wanted to make friends there, I guess, in case he ever had to go there. And I remember he was there playing one day, playing the accordion, just really blessing everybody and just being the entertainer that he was, and he died. He stroked out on the spot and died on the spot and was gone. Just that fast, he was with Jesus. So guys, listen to me. If you have a loved one or a family member who dies suddenly and they're having some health issues, you know, sometimes it's just easier if they're saved just to let them go, and you're going to miss them. I'm not going to say it's going to be easy, but guys, sometimes we have to let go and let God, because I promise you, you'll see them soon enough. My mom's been dead now for 10 years. She was also born again. And I remember I was speaking and doing her eulogy at the funeral. And I looked at her down in the casket and I said to her, I said, well, Mom, I'll see you soon enough again. And see, that's the thing we have. That's the hope that we have in Christ Jesus. So if we've lost loved ones over the holidays, just realize we have hope in Christ Jesus. If you're having financial problems over the holidays, you can't buy your family the presents that you want to buy them, remember, life's not about material stuff. Life's about the love that you have for one another and the caring that you have for one another and the relationships that you develop. And if you need a job, just believe God for the new year that God's going to have a job for you and that you're going to have a job of your dreams. And always remember this, guys. You know, it's not by power, it's not by might, it's by my spirit, saith the Lord. And we need to realize, guys, that sometimes, you know, we just got to wait there in God's waiting room. But in the meantime, we have to do everything we possibly can on our own to do what we need to do. Remember, I read you my old German plaque from my grandmother a long time ago. It said, Schweileben stutzen brecken nie, Gebetung Arbeit heißen sie. What that means is there's two fundamental principles in life, two pillars of life that can never be broken, pillars of life, and that's prayer and work. So always pray like it's up to you. Pray like it's up to God and work like it's up to you. That's very, very, very important. By the way, Austrian gun sales have quadrupled as migrant crime rises. This is from Breitbart. Gun sales in Austria have quadrupled as citizens of that nation seek to secure means of self-defense in response to the immigrant crisis that has enveloped Europe due to Angela Merkel's stupidity. I've added that. Earlier in 2016, the crisis led Austria to begin limiting the number of asylum applications it would receive. But gun sales began to skyrocket prior to this move being made. According to the local, the number of weapons, a newspaper there, the number of weapons permits issued in Vienna and Styria in particular in September 2015 more than have quadrupled in November. This is an indicator of the number of Austrians seeking out firearms for self-defense, and the increased demand for firearms has continued. In 2016, the UK's Express reported that Jeffrey Pang, an employee of John Springer's, Austria's oldest gun store, said the buying surge in firearm sales coincided with reports of robberies, rapes, and break-ins since the migrant crisis has begun. He added, following the rise in attacks, customers want pepper sprays, combat trumpet training, concealed carry weapons. Our security level has diminished in the last couple of months. You see the crowds, they're shouting, they're drinking, there's no security anymore, Pang said. Guys, this is important that you realize that we have a Second Amendment right in the United States. In Germany and Austria, it's not easy as it is here to get guns. It's very difficult. You can get them, but it's very difficult. By the way, the European Union now has decided that they're going to increase tougher, make gun laws tougher, because they're saying it against, it's because of the increased terror threat. That way only the terrorists are going to have guns, Sharon. And they should see what happened this last week, or this week, I should say, in Berlin. You don't have to have a gun to kill people. You can take a doggone semi-truck and run it through a crowd of people, and you can kill a whole bunch of people. But that's starting to look more and more like a false flag. And I'm going to talk about that tonight on the Hagmann Show. We've got a lot of great stuff that we're going to cover on the Hagmann Show. Guys, I did exactly what I told you I was going to do. I've got a complete breakdown of the energy fields and why they use the energy of these young children and why these pedophile rings are protected. We're going to talk about that tonight on the show, and it's really going to wake you up a lot. It's also going to talk about the hope that we have in Christ for Christian. But Russia Today says that EU states have reached an agreement on stricter gun controls following a wave of attacks which have terrorized Europe over the past 2 years. The move aims to limit the means by which extremists could obtain deadly weapons legally. That doesn't say they can't get them illegally. This whole thing's ridiculous, by the way. The EU Commission announced that 28 members reached a political agreement with the European Parliament to tighten gun control laws, which have been in place since 1991. The debate on stricter gun control measures have persisted since 2015, following the Paris attacks, which left 130 people dead. The main changes to the firearms directive include placing a ban on semi-automatic firearms. See, here's the problem, guys. When you do that, you're only banning the criminals. You're only banning the legitimate people, the people that are not criminals, from having the firearms. The criminals don't care. This is the ban. They pick them up off the corner. They go into the Muslim armories that are downtown, and they pick them up there from the local mosques that are running some of these things. They include automatic firearms transformed into semi-automatic firearms, long semi-automatic firearms, the length of less than 60 centimeters, long semi-automatic firearms with loading devices more than 10 rounds, and short semi-automatic firearms with a loading device of more than 20 rounds, the commission said. It won't help, guys. None of this is going to help. They need to arm the Europeans, or they need to stop bringing these people in. What do you think, Sharon?
Oh, I agree completely, Ted. And Merkel, I mean, just in Germany, I'll be so glad when this election starts up in Germany and they can replace that lady. Of course, she's not as bad as Hillary, but I think she and Hillary are probably pretty good friends. And it's like just a mirror image, you know, of what's going on over there is what was starting over here in the United States. But, I mean, I am so saddened. If I lived in Germany right now, I'm so saddened by what Germany has the reason I say Germany, because we spent so much time over there, but we've been in a lot of these other European countries that they're having a lot of problems, but it's so ridiculous. And we are so blessed in the United States that we have the right to bear arms. Don't ever take that for granted. always remember that you have that right, and you need to use that right. And I've said this before, that every woman over the age of, I think it's 21, needs to get a concealed weapons permit. It's just, you have that right to do it. You might as well take advantage of it, because you're pretty much not going to get to do that in any other country. And I hope and pray that President Trump is going to make it better. He's going to give us more hope. And that's all what this is all about, Ted. We just want hope. And the first thing and the most important thing to have hope in your heart is to have Jesus Christ the center of your life. And the problem is, there's a lot of people out there that aren't saved, that don't have that hope and don't have that peace and don't have that joy. And it's just, it's sad, because when you have that, you want other people to have that. When you have that, you want to share that with other people. And I'll say one thing about my husband and my oldest son. They are so strong about sharing the gospel with people. I mean, they don't shoot it down people's throat like a fire hose. They actually play checkers, and I've watched my husband do that. And I'm not saying I don't witness to people, but Ted's more out there as far as with other people and more in the public eye than I am. But we have a platform where we can actually bring people to Christ. And a lot of times, you may not know how to do it. We've talked about this before. And just have them listen to our show. You can trust us. You can trust the content of this show. You won't be embarrassed. We're not going to act like a bunch of weirdos and you know, and say a bunch of weird things. I mean, check it with the Word. Always go back and check the Scriptures with anything that we say, anything that anybody says. But the most important thing, especially right now, this week, is that we've got to be able to give other people hope. And, you know, Austin, to get on a different subject, I was thinking about things, let's say as a wife and a mother and in your home, how to make your home more of a, I guess, positive holiday environment. Because there's so much negative stuff out there right now, Ted. I mean, we've got a new president coming in several weeks, and, I mean, we're all just like on edge waiting. And it's a feeling of, I guess, just you're unsure.
Well, no, you're absolutely right, Sharon. In fact, I was just on the phone with Doug Hagman for about 30 minutes before our show started. And I told Doug, I said, if you guys had watched Star Wars, you'll know what I mean by this. Now, I'm not saying it's like Star Wars. I'm just using it as a metaphor. So don't yell New Agey on me here or telling me that I'm a New Ager. I'm not going to. Please don't do that. You guys know me better than that. But, you know, when Yoda – or with the little monkey looking thing, when he was basically saying that, when I think it was the Alderaan system, some planet was destroyed by the Death Star, and he said there's a great disturbance in the Force. He felt it. And see, and you know, it's funny he said that, because there's an energy field around the planet that's kind of like when 9/11 happened, there was a great disturbance in the energy field. The frequency of the actual planet went down when all of these people died at 9/11 in that giant human sacrifice ceremony they had. Now, what's strange about all of this stuff is this. Right now, there's two competing factions on who's going to run the United States. The globalists with Hillary, and the globalists pretty much with Trump, and also the nationalists with Trump. We don't really have a clear-cut indication of who Trump really is yet. And I've got some ideas, but I don't want to say anything negative about Trump, because I'm going to give him a chance to do something. Because, quite frankly, between the two of them, between Hillary or Trump, there wasn't even a choice. And that's why I really, really am so thankful to God Almighty that we prayed that Hillary would be fully exposed, and she was denied the election. By the way, the judge has now okayed Trump's university settlement, by the way, right before he's sworn in, 2 days before. On Tuesday evening, the U.S. District Court, Gonzalo Curiel, issued an order for the Trump University to pay $25 million to settle lawsuits over the president-elect's educational real estate program. The president-elect Donald Trump agreed in November to settle with more than 6,000 students who said they were cheated by Trump University with false promises of teaching them his real estate tricks. Trump University ceased giving classes in 2010, 6 years ago. The decision to settle involves two class action lawsuits and a fraud case filed in 2013 by the New York Attorney General. The $25 million settlement must be handed over to the plaintiff's lawyers by January the 18th. 2017, just 2 days before Donald Trump's inauguration ceremony. If the university is unable to do so, Trump himself has to come up with the money, which I don't think that's going to be a problem. The settlement includes $21 million for the former students, while the rest goes to the New York Attorney General. The plaintiff's attorneys have already agreed to waive their fees. I thought that was interesting. And have been working the case pro bono.
Wow.
The deal would refund about half of the fees that students of Trump University had paid, which were typically between $1,500 for a three-day seminar and $35,000 for an in-person mentorship program. The suit says the eligible class members will receive payments estimated amount of 50% of what they spent on Trump University's live events, plus any refunds received. As part of the settlement, Trump and Trump University did not have to admit to any wrongdoing, and President Trump is pleased to have this case behind him so he can focus on the important issues facing the country. Trump's attorney previously said he is willing to sacrifice his personal interest to put this behind him and move forward. So I thought that was pretty good. So it's basically what Trump has done. He's agreed to a settlement rather than continue to fight this just so he doesn't have to deal with this while he's in the White House. That's pretty magnanimous. Of course, he's worth billions of dollars, so $25 million sounds like a lot to all of us, but to him, it's not that much money, I don't guess, though it's still not chump change either. So I'm glad he did this. What do you think, Sharon, that he got this thing settled out?
Oh, I think it's great. I just hope that there aren't going to be, you know, more of these situations that are going to happen. But, you know, he's out there now, so he's just going to have to clean up anything that's he's done in the past or, you know, people. It's almost like a football player, you know, that gets real famous. All of a sudden, you get all these suits that he did this and he did that, and I just hope there's not a lot of trails behind him that he's going to have to clean up, because I'd like him to really be focusing on getting, you know, America great again and safe again and jobs again and all that, and not have things that are going to, you know, distract him, which I really don't think he will be. I think he's got enough money set aside that he can pay people to take care of all this.
Well, I hope so. I hope so. Oh, by the way, the U.S. economic confidence is surging to the highest level that Gallup has ever recorded. Wow. This is from Zero Hedge. Gallup's U.S. economic confidence index has now risen to the highest level that Gallup has ever seen. America's confidence in the economy continues to gradually strengthen after last month's post-election surge. Gallup, the U.S. economic confidence average index, plus 10% for the week ending December the 18th, marking another new high in its nine-year trend. The latest figure is up slightly from the index previous high of plus 8 recorded in both of the prior 2 weeks. The first positive double-digit index score since the inception of the Gallup daily tracking in 2008 reflects a stark change in America's confidence in the U.S. economy from the negative news and views they expressed in the most weeks over the past 9 years. The result of CNBC's All-American Economic Survey after the election was nothing short of historic. The CNBC All-American Economic Survey for the fourth quarter found that the percentage of Americans who believe the economy will get better in the next year jumped an unprecedented 17 points to 42% compared to before the election. It's the highest level since President Barack Obama was first elected in 2008. On Tuesday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed at yet another all-time high. This was the 17th record close since the election day. Now, guys, I want you to be very careful right now with this because, number one, the powers that run the Federal Reserve Bank are the ones that were backing the Clintons. Remember what they said in the one email that was Podesta released, not Podesta, but WikiLeaks released, that Hillary Clinton was going to do penance to Linda Rothschild. So she looks at these guys like a superior satanic agent over herself, as far as I'm concerned. So what's interesting about this is that these guys are now saying they're going to have a whole bunch of interest rate increases in the economy. If that happens, it's going to do a real big short change on housing, on automobile loans, and a lot of other big sectors of the economy. Plus, remember, and I mentioned this earlier, I'll mention it again. When Donald Trump is coming, when Ronald Reagan came in and he had the same type of attitude with big business cutting, big corporate taxes and all that kind of stuff, the interest rates were close to 20%. So he was able to cut taxes. We really can't cut the interest anymore. It's down to around 0%. And the Federal Reserve doesn't really listen to the government. I think one of the first things that Trump needs to do is take back control of the Federal Reserve Bank and make a decision that he's not going to allow these guys to control the U.S. economy any longer and do it through inflation and deflation, pump and dump strategy, so to speak. If Trump will get a firm hand on this Federal Reserve mess and tell them, I'm fixing to take away your charter like Andrew Jackson did, if you guys don't stop this, if he does that, he can put a stop to this manipulation of the currencies. If he doesn't, they're going to do everything they possibly can to mess with him while he's in office. Now, if that happens, he's going to have a mess to handle. Now, the globalists could also throw a giant war at him, or another multi-pronged strategy at him, to do everything they can to try to restore their balance of power. This is the same thing that happened with Hitler. There were two competing factions in the Hitler government of who wanted to control Germany and who wanted to control Europe. Now, these same competing factions are still going strong here as far as who's supporting who. So, guys, please continue to pray for Trump. Pray that he's led by the Holy Spirit. Pray that any satanic or the evil influence that may try to persuade him to do otherwise would be quelched and be stopped. So if we can do that, and we have a person in who can actually run the country like a corporation, which it turned into anyhow after the Civil War, if we can do that, at this point, we're going to have the ability to restore the country and restore prosperity back to the United States. We have almost 100 million people right now that are unemployed, and hopefully, this thing's going to be taken care of. Oh, by the way, a small New Jersey town is suing DuPont for $1.1 billion over alleged £100 million of toxic waste dumping. That's a lot of toxic waste. A small town in New Jersey has sued DuPont for $1.1 billion, claiming it has dumped more than 100 million pounds of toxic waste into the soil and water near the Delaware River. A disaster worse than Exxon Valdez. It will take 1,000 years to clean up. I don't think that's true, but that's what they say. The site has been linked to cancer clusters in the area, and thousands of New Jersey residents have sued DuPont for contaminating their drinking water. One such case was settled in 1993 for almost $40 million. In another case, DuPont paid $800 per household. Guys, this is a major, major problem with what's happening with groundwater contamination. I personally believe that regardless of the industry, whether it's the coal industry, petrochemical, industrial, whatever it is, that they need to be responsible for maintaining clean discharges from their plants. If they damage the ecosystem in their area, they need to be responsible for cleaning it up. Down here in Florida with the phosphate mines, we have what's called reclamation, and where they'll dig these mines out very deep. They're required to replant, to cover the mines back up again and replant them. The biggest toxic problem we have down here in Florida are what we call phosphate slurry, in which the chemicals that are used to pull the phosphate out are put in these giant slurry ponds that literally take 20, 30 years to dry out. They're like slime pits is what they are. And they'll build a dam around them because, you know, we're pretty much at sea level down here, so they have to build a dam up. And they'll build one maybe 30, 40 feet tall, and they basically fill it with this phosphate slurry. But if one of these breaks, it'll completely flood the side of the countrysides. So we've got a major problem here in Florida in the phosphate industry as far as contaminating a lot of the aquifers in our area. Just a few weeks ago, one of these phosphate mines, these slurries, developed a big hole in the bottom of it. It dumped right into the Florida aquifer with all those chemicals going right into the fresh spring water in Florida. So it's a major mess that has to be fixed. And quite frankly, I don't think the phosphate plants should be allowed, grandfathered in or anything, to be using this phosphate slurry and dumping it like this. I think they should be able to reclaim it and basically redischarge it back into the environment after they clean up all the chemicals out of it. What's your next story, Sharon?
Well, just talking about water, Ted, it's such a precious resource. And now in health and wellness, they're saying bathing in chlorinated water may be worse for you than drinking it. Bathing in chlorinated water is worse than drinking it because of it bypasses your liver. Now, chlorine is the most widely used disinfectant in public water systems. We know that, and we've talked about that. It has a toxic gas. It's been used for chemical weapons. It attacks all the living cells. And the problem is we may have a distiller, you may have purified water, whatever you're drinking, but think about the water that you're putting on your body. Because when you use a shower, when you take a bath, and the water's chlorinated, let's say the city water's chlorinated, it's been shown that the chlorine diminishes the vitamin E and the vitamin C and the polyunsaturated fatty acids in the skin, potentially resulting in eye and skin irritations. Now, chlorine is so strong that I've noticed that if I'm anywhere around it, I just start itching. It's such a poison. And we've actually got water filters so people can take a shower and get the chlorine out of their water when they use that. But then you talk about, what about swimming pools? You've got to really be careful because the skin is your largest organ, and we're absorbing that chlorine into our bodies. Spanish researchers at the Municipal Institute of Medical Research in Barcelona found that people who bathe in chlorinated water have a significantly higher chance of getting bladder cancer than those who filtered or, you know, went through like well water. So it's real important. We talk about drinking water all the time, how important it is to drink pure water and what, you know, chlorinated water does to you. But the city water, I mean, we've just got to make sure that we're not taking showers in it. Sure, you may have to swim in it every now and then. That's bad enough. But every day, twice a day, whatever, you're taking showers. I know even on a cruise ship one time, they had, I think, borax in the water, Ted. I mean, it was, remember, it wasn't even just chlorine. It was borax. And I washed my hair, and it just fried it. I mean, I had to get it cut. It was so bad. So I don't know what they're putting on those cruise ship waters. We actually would bring a shower filter. And of course, the shower filter didn't attach properly to the shower. And so I ended up going downstairs and getting filtered water and filling up jugs and jugs and jugs and jugs and washing my hair and that, because I sure didn't trust the water. But I mean, it just shows you how bad this stuff is.
Well, you know, the cruise ships is funny too, because I've talked about it before on the ships, because they do put chlorine in the water, but they don't put fluoride in the water. And I don't know what those other chemicals were they had put in there, if it was borax or whatever it was. I don't know what it was, because that was so many years ago. But I remember I asked them, I said, why don't you use fluoride in the cruise ship as far as in the water? And they go, well, that we can't. It's too corrosive. It destroys the pipes. Now think about what they're just saying. It's that toxic. And I said, why do you put chlorine in there? And they said, well, we want to make sure that the water doesn't have any bacteria in it. And I said, well, what type of water do you use on the ship? He goes, well, we have a giant distiller that runs off the manifold heat from the engines. And we basically can make literally hundreds of thousands of gallons of water, distilled water, every single day. And that's what we put through the pipes. So the water was actually good on the ship, because they didn't have any other chemicals in it besides chlorine on this last ship we were on. That was like 4 years ago. But what we did is we got one of those little cheap Brita filters, because trying to drag a distillation system on a cruise ship is a real headache, because it's just so heavy. Because, you know, we had to fly down to Buenos Aires to pick this boat up. And so what was interesting is we ended up getting a Brita filter, which I don't recommend those, because they only take chlorine out. They don't take fluoride out. But it did okay for the ship. And then what we would do is we would go down to the drinking water, which is basically already filtered from the machines that you get your sodas out of, et cetera. They have iced tea and drinking water there. What we would do is we would fill our glasses up, like Sharon was saying, and then we'd run that back and run that through the Brita filter again to make sure that we weren't going to be contaminating our bodies with chlorine. You say, well, that's a lot of work. Well, yeah, it is a lot of work to do all that. But guys, listen to me. You're either going to use a filter or you're going to be a filter. I'm going to repeat that. You're either going to use a filter or you're going to be a filter. You're either going to have to filter that junk out through your kidneys and through your liver, or you're going to filter it out before it goes in there. So we decided that we didn't want to be a filter. We wanted to use a filter. And that's why we have the distillation systems available. And by the way, we've got a coupon that's going to be active this afternoon at 5 o'clock. I'm going to tell you guys about it first. It'll be a Doug5, D-O-U-G-5, Doug5 coupon, 5% off everything at HealthMaster starting at 5 o'clock today. It'll be good through Sunday night. And what it's going to do, it'll be in conjunction with the Doug Hagman show that we're doing tonight. That's why I want you guys to have the first shot at the coupon in case we run out of inventory or anything. Because I know a lot of times you guys call me up and say, well, we tried to order it off the coupon and we had to wait because it was out of stock. But we'll still honor the coupon. But we have a pretty good inventory supply right now, so we should be good. But Doug, D-O-U-G, the number 5 for the coupon code starting at 5 o'clock today. That'll be Thursday evening at 5. Now, by the way, kids are now connecting on social media. They're becoming less satisfied with real life, and they're looking more towards artificial reality. This is from Bloomberg's. Kids who spend more time chatting on social media websites feel reduced satisfaction about all parts of their lives except for their friendships. Research from the Institute of Labor Economics shows. Looking at a national sample of British children between the ages of 10 and 15, the researchers found that spending 1 hour a day chatting on social networks reduced the probability of a kid being completely satisfied with his or her life overall by around 14 points. Children might have been exposed to cyberbullying, had less time left over to do other things that would have improved their well-being, or they may have had made comparisons about their lives against other lives, the research suggests. That's the problem with Facebook. I'm going to talk about that in just a second. Why does it matter economically? Childhood experiences are important in shaping how they'll succeed as adults. The authors say so. It makes sense to pay attention to something that's putting a dent in the early happiness and fulfillment of future workers. Here's the biggest problem I have with Facebook. Facebook's turned into this giant show and tell. I have friends of mine Every time they get a new car, it's on Facebook. Every time they get a new flat screen TV, it's on Facebook. Every time they go on vacation, it's on Facebook. Every time they rent a cottage in the mountains, it's on Facebook. Every time they have anything happen to them, they get a raise at work, it's on Facebook. Whenever they get a bonus, it's on Facebook. When they tell people they're going to go on vacation for 2 weeks, it's on Facebook, and then their houses get robbed. I mean, it's a crazy thing. Oh, by the way, I got a big brand new flat screen TV, and by the way, I'll be on vacation for the next 2 weeks. Okay. Well, now somebody wants to come take the flat screen away from home. And Sharon, you know I'm right. It's turned into this brag and tell thing, show and tell thing. And see, that's no good. That's not what Facebook is supposed to be all about. But Facebook is supposed to be about how to stay in touch with your friends and family. That's what it's supposed to be about. And oh, by the way, it was set up by the CIA, and it was financed by the CIA, and it's a giant spy tool. That's why I don't have a Facebook page. HealthMasters has a Facebook page, but I don't do all that. Now my daughter-in-law, Lana, she has a Facebook page because her parents, this is Austin's wife, are missionaries in Ecuador, and they're home for the holidays for a month. But most of the time they're down in Ecuador, and since they have a grandbaby, it's just so much easier to go ahead and post the stuff on Facebook so the other relatives can see the pictures of the grandbaby. And that's the big thing with Lana's Facebook page. It's not a show and tell except for about Hunter. I mean, it's all about the blonde-haired, blue-eyed little boy who's doing so well with Hunter. So it's kind of interesting. Plus, also remember, guys, a lot of kids become social media junkies, and they become complete and totally incapable of dealing with the real world or real people. And so what ends up happening is they get into a situation where they're continually, you know, thinking that their reality in this made-up cyber world is better. Really limit your amount of time that your kids get to spend on Facebook and on their iPhones. And I know with Harrison, I didn't even get him a phone until he started college. And when he's 15, 16 years old, he's 17 now, almost 18. And I told him, I said, you don't need a phone. What do you need a phone for? You're homeschooled. You need a phone. If you want us to pick you up, just, you know, we're going to be with you anyhow. And so he finally got a telephone, and he uses it too much. I will admit that, because he uses it for everything. But my other daughters, my 13-year-old and my 16-year-old, they don't have a telephone. And I'm going to repeat that. They don't have a telephone, and they don't have an iPad. Now, we have to give them computer access because they have to have the ability to learn typing skills, et cetera. Now, Alexis will be starting college. She's 16. She'll be starting college in January, next month, a couple weeks, because she's already passed her entrance exams. And at that point in time, she still won't get a telephone because she doesn't need a phone. When I was in college, I didn't have a phone. If somebody's picking you up, arrange it in advance. If something happens, you can call her. She can call her brother up who's be picking her up, because she doesn't have a driver's license yet because she spent that year out in Montana. So what will happen is she'll have the ability to call him on his cell phone from one of the public phones they have at the university, and she can do it from that. She does not need her own telephone. Guys, think about this for a second. Kids, in most cases, do not need their own cars unless both parents work. Kids, in most cases, do not need their own telephones unless they have to have them to be in contact with your parents if they're driving. They just don't need all of that. So what we do is we have a tendency to give them all this cyber stuff, thinking that it's going to be okay and it's not going to affect them in a negative way. Guys, newsflash, it's affecting them in a negative way. A lot of these kids are getting hooked on pornography at 10, 8, 6. Their friends are showing them stuff. They got their own phones. The other day, I was in a doggone restaurant. Somebody had a kid in a high chair, and they had the phone. He was playing with the phone in the high chair. I'm like, are you kidding me? And I'm like, this is ridiculous. Well, this is what we're going to. We're going to that connection into the cloud, in which people become cyberbots, so to speak, robots. They want to make them superhuman, but actually they're going to be subhumans, and they're not going to be able to think on their own any longer. It's going to be an interesting show tonight on Hagman. We'll be discussing this in detail. What do you think about all these kids having all these phones, Sharon?
Oh, Ted, you really want to get me started. You know how I feel. But the thing is, Ted, is parents have quit parenting. And what they've done is they've given the phones have turned into like a babysitter or to meet all the needs that the parents normally would meet. They're not teaching their kids how to communicate. I'll say one thing about you. We have our prayer time every day in the morning before everybody leaves. I mean, it's a communication powwow. I mean, our kids have got to communicate. They've got to talk. We force them to do that. And we're going to have to do that more and more and more as the generations go on and on and on because of all this, because of the Snapchat and all that and the texting. They don't know how to speak. They don't know how to communicate. It's really, really getting bad. And we're seeing it more and more and more. Another thing is, you know, these kids, they... Just because you can doesn't mean you should. What I mean by that is, okay, you've got the money, you're blessed, you could buy your kids pretty much, you know, a used car, a phone, and whatever that, but think about what you're buying them and what you're giving them, and is it good for them, and do they really need it? If they really need it in your situation, and it's not bad for them, then do it. But just because you can doesn't mean you should, because they're so entitled now that all they want to do is just communicate with their phones. I know our 15-year-old went out with my son and a friend or something and said, well, Mom, I don't have a phone. Well, she connects her identity with having a cell phone. Tell me what's wrong with that picture, Ted. I mean, that's just not normal. But that's what they want them to do. They want them to be totally controlled by the media, by the cyber, by everything. And your identity is who you are in Christ Jesus, not if you have a cell phone or not. I mean, are people going to not like you because you don't have the right cell phone? Are people not going to like you because you don't have Snapchat? I mean, it's getting so ridiculous.
Well, no, I remember when Austin, back when he was 16, I guess it was 2004, he wanted a car when he turned 16. And you guys are going to, I can tell you this story because Austin's not on the air. I wouldn't do it in front of him, but I guess I'm kind of doing it in front of him because you guys are going to send him emails. I told the story. But what happened is, you know, I wanted to get him a nice little used car to drive around in, but he didn't want the used car I was going to buy him because he wanted like something, you know, really fast. I mean, 16 years old, he didn't need that. And so he kept nagging me. And finally I told him, I said, okay, I'll get you something. And so he came home from church camp, and I think he was still 15. And his aunt, Sharon's mom's sister, was selling a 1988 Crown Vic. Now, you guys think I'm joking you, but I'm not joking you guys. I bought that car for $800. And so what I did is I put it in the garage and just put it in the garage. He didn't know it was in there. So finally he comes walking in the house after camp, and he goes, what's that Aunt Janie's, you know, Crown Vic doing in the garage? And I said, that's your car, bud. He goes, you bought me a 1988 Crown Vic. I said, yeah, next time I offer you a nice used car, you just say, thank you, Dad, I appreciate it, instead of telling me what you want and making demands. I said, now you could choke on the 88 Crown Vic. And sure enough, he ended up driving that car back and forth to college. You know, mm-hmm. And I probably should have kept that doggone thing for him, because, you know, it's one of those cars that it ran good and had power windows, power door locks, had the AC that worked. I probably should have kept it, because, you know, for $800, I mean, gosh. But we ended up selling it a little while later, and we ended up getting more money than we had paid for it. So I was real happy about that, which is very difficult to do nowadays with used cars, because they've always there. Most of the cash for clunkers took all those old cars off the road. But that was his first car, was a 1988 Crown Vic. When Harrison turned 16 or 15, I told Austin, because Austin had a 2002, it was a 4Runner with like 170,000 miles on it. And I bought that car from Austin to give to Harrison when he turned 16, when he drove himself, because for the first 6 months, Harrison, we had to take him back and forth to school, to college, because he started college at 15 like Austin did. And so he basically was escorted back and forth to school by us. We drove him back and took turns. And then when he turned 16 in April, we gave him that old 4Runner, and he drove it for a long, long time. And so what's interesting about this is, guys, you don't have to give your children a brand new car. You don't have to go into debt. I mean, the 4Runner, I think I paid $3,000 for it. I mean, right. It was no big deal. I mean, the car, and I sold it for, you know, about what I paid for that. So don't feel as though you're obligated to buy your kids a car that you got to make payments on and go into debt for, just like you don't have to feel obligated to go ahead and sign the student loans with your children. Now the government is actually, according to Obama, good old Obama again, he's now taking people who have not paid their student loans, who are now retiring and on Social Security, he's automatically debiting student loan payments out of their Social Security and not giving them the full Social Security checks. Yes.
Wow.
So if you haven't paid your student loans and you're about to retire, that's going to happen to you too. So what an unbelievable mess we've had with this president, this Gay Kenyon, and this president from HE Double Sticks for the past 8 years. And the craziest thing is this. I'll give the Republicans this. You know, George Bush was so horrible. He really was. I mean, George W. was absolutely horrific as a president, that when we got Obama in, Mr. Hope and Change, we all thought, okay, he can't be worse than Bush. Guess what? He was George Bush on steroids. This guy's been horrible. So now we have Trump in, and so we have everybody saying, okay, wow, this is going to be great. So unless the central bank crashes the economy, or the central bank massively increases interest rates, or the central bank, which controls the wars, basically, takes us to war again, we're not going to have the ability to allow Trump to do what he needs to do, so we need to pray that. Oh, by the way, another article. Antipsychotic drugs now have been shown to increase the risk for Alzheimer's death, the patients for death. Antipsychotic drugs are routinely given to Alzheimer's patients, but they increase the risk of death by almost 60%. And the patient is twice as likely to die if she or she's been given two or more antipsychotics. most dangerous time is when the patient first starts taking the drug. Now, I don't know why you give an Alzheimer patient psychotic drugs. I mean, you got an aluminum buildup in the brain that caused this. They don't have a deficiency of Prozac or Zoloft. They said that basically the researchers came to their conclusions after they analyzed the treatment of 57,000 people diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. And of these, 27% were given an antipsychotic, and they were compared to healthy people who weren't taking the drug. The trouble is, says the researchers, none of this is news. It was established 10 years ago that antipsychotics can be lethal and should be only used rarely and for the most difficult cases, such as to treat agitation or aggression. Despite these concerns, antipsychotics are routinely used and a common therapy for Alzheimer's and dementia, the researchers say. Guys, if you got a person with Alzheimer's disease, we've seen some pretty good research on this online. Use coconut oil for them. Try to get 3 or 4 tablespoons of coconut oil down a day. Cook it in, use it as a finish for your salad, whatever you have to do to get them to use the coconut oil. Also, vitamin E. Vitamin E really increases brain flow of oxygen. Increases the blood flow to the oxygen and oxygen to the brain. Also, you need to get them on turmeric. It's an anti-inflammatory compound, and they need to be on chelation therapy because in a lot of cases, Alzheimer's patients are loaded with heavy metals and aluminum. And so if you get them on the chelation or Chelex, or you go have intravenous chelation done, it'll really help to clean this stuff back out. We've seen promising results with all of this stuff. But guys, here's the thing. Isn't it easier to avoid aluminum pots and pans, foil, cooking foil, and nitrous skill is all they also put aluminum as a anti-caking agent in baking soda and baking powder? I mean, and antiperspirant deodorants, which has also been linked out of breast cancer. Isn't it easier to avoid aluminum in the immunizations and the vaccines that you're getting than trying to get the stuff back out of your system? I mean, it just makes more sense to me. If you know that you're going to have a massive increase of Alzheimer's, which we proved earlier on a show this week when we talked about Alzheimer's and its link to aluminum, doesn't it make sense just to get off of stuff and get the aluminum back out of your system? What do you think about that, Sharon?
Oh, no, I totally agree with you, Ted, and it's just a vicious cycle. But one thing I want to do is go back. You had hit something a while ago when you talked about being in debt with the student loans and stuff. It's gone really into an epidemic state as far as students having to pay back debt, and I think that maybe one day you could do a show because you have really found a way that is really working well for our children as far as going to the collegiate high school, because so many of the junior colleges that we all went to now are state colleges. The states are doing that. And there is a way that they can actually go and get a lot of their school paid for and have that done in advance. And then, you know, whatever happened to the days where you work a part-time job and you take a couple classes, then you work another, you work part-time job and take another couple classes, and you go at a very slow pace to get your bills paid, and you're really not going into debt. That's how we were raised, unless you, you know, have a prepaid education. But then if that's not really possible, then we need to help the parents look at the alternatives of how they can start their children to go ahead and get college credits, and a lot of people know that already, but college credits while they're in high school to avoid all this debt. I think that would be a tremendous show, and it would be a just a plethora of information for people that are just fighting all this debt that they have.
Well, I can make that pretty simple. Well, I don't have to do a whole show on it. I can kind of give a synopsis of it. Most high schools now have dual programs with the local colleges in which they have what's called dual enrollment. And these kids get like 3 free years of college enrollment during their high school years. So they can actually go to college, the 10th, 11th, and 12th grade. And the state pays for the tuition, and the state pays for the books. At least here in Florida, they do. Now, sometimes they don't want to pay for the books. If you push them, they usually do. So what happens is if you have a collegiate high school program that's set up like that, all you have to do is make sure your kids are really well grounded in English and mathematics and basically in reading comprehension, and we'll have to take 3 classes, one in English, or 3 tests, one in English, reading comprehension, and one in mathematics. And even if they don't pass the mathematics, which is a lot of algebra because they're so young, they'll let them get in anyhow and start taking collegiate classes for full college credit in their freshman or sophomore year in high school. Now, this is what we did with the kids. Now, our kids scored well on the test, so they were able to take like three classes their first semester, which allowed them to get 9 full collegiate hours along with their homeschool they were doing. Now, a lot of times you can do this with the high school classes too, and the high school will let you do this. But what it allows you to do is start them taking classes. So the first semester, Harrison had 9 hours. Second semester, 9 hours. That was 18 hours. Third semester was the summer class. We got like 12 more hours. So he ended up having 30 hours of collegiate credit after his first year as a sophomore in high school. Now, he was still doing homeschool courses too. Then the 11th grade year, they allowed him to go ahead and take 15 hours in two semesters. That got him up to 60 at the end of that. And now he's finishing his third year. And he'll, at the end of this year, he'll have 90 collegiate hours towards a bachelor's degree. This university, this college gives out bachelor degrees, fully accredited school with bachelor degrees. So he'll have 90 hours completed at the end of his senior year in high school. So he's graduating from the collegiate high school. He already has completed enough hours to complete his AA degree. So he'll actually get a diploma for his AA degree first in May. Then in June, he'll either graduate valedictorian or probably salutatorian. I'll let you guys know in the collegiate high school. Because what also happens with the state, when you take all these advanced high school and college classes, it pushes you, as long as you maintain a good GPA, it pushes you up in class placement. So then he only has like 30 hours left that he's already qualified now for the Bright Future Scholarship. He has 30 hours left to go ahead and get that tuition paid again through the state for his final year of college. Now remember this, he has no housing expenses, he has no automobile expenses, he has no anything expenses. He pretty much has gone through 3 full years of college paid with absolutely nothing, and now next year he'll have scholarships for all of it. So he may have to spend $3,000 or $4,000 that's not covered in books and tuition to finish his collegiate degree. Now, that'll finish his bachelor's degree. When he graduates, he'll be 18 years of age. Actually, he'll be graduating the college degree. He'll have just turned 19, like Austin did. So he'll be 19 years old when he graduates with his bachelor's degree with almost zero money out of pocket for me and Sharon. They think, well, that's pretty cool. Well, you probably have that same thing available. Now, if your kids don't want to go to college, don't force them because it doesn't guarantee you that you're going to get a good paying job. Harrison will be applying to law school after he gets out of college or the MBA program at one of the local universities before he goes to law school. And then hopefully he'll be able to go on to law school and he'll probably do something like real estate law or be the lead counsel for certain corporations, et cetera. And so that's what he wants to do, you know, for a living and have his own business with law. So that's something you can do when you have a degree. If you're going to be an engineer or a lawyer or an attorney or a nurse or a teacher, something that requires licensing, when you get those degrees, you can actually set yourself up in a private practice or as a teacher, and it allows you the ability to have a foot up, an edge up, as far as in the economy and in the world. So if a child doesn't want to go to college, don't make them go to college. That's really, really, really important. And tell your kids this, and this is how I would do it. If they're 16, 17 years old, and they're like a sophomore or freshman in high school or whatever they are, and you say to them, I want you to do the collegiate high school program, and they're going to go, well, I don't want to do that. I'm having too much fun in high school. My next words out of my mouth would be this. I am not signing for student loans. Those are the next words out of my mouth.
That's right.
You can go to school right now for free. I'm giving you the opportunity to do that if you can pass these exams, if you really want to go. But if you want to start college, when we get out of high school, I said, you are on your own. I have an opportunity now to get at least 2 to 3 years of free college for you. And if you don't want to do this because you want to be in a cheerleader, which you can be a cheerleader in high school or in college while you're there too, or you want to basically hang out with your friends and go do weird things on the weekends with them or get drunk or whatever and be stupid, you go and do all that. But I'm not going to subsidize your college when you decide to do this. So I'm letting you know in advance. Now, Alexis, I told my daughter, my 15-year-old, when we sent her to Montana last year, she was 14 years old, and we had her in private school there for a year. I said, now what's going to happen is you're going to turn 15 there. Now, you want to go out there. I got that. I'm okay with that. I said, you want to go to 15? I said, but what's going to happen is this. You're going to turn 15, and you're not going to come home until you're for a year. So you're going to almost be 16 years old when you come home, and you won't have your restricted driver's license yet. So then it'll be another full year after you get home before you get a driver's license. So I'm letting you know in advance that's what's going to happen. And when you're 16 years old, nobody's catering to you. If you have to, you can take Uber. You know, you can run around if you have to go somewhere, if we don't have time to take you somewhere. But you're a 16-year-old female, brilliant girl. You should have had a driver's license by this point. And if you don't want one because you want to go chill out in Montana for a year, I'm okay with that. I'll do all of that for you. But there are going to be consequences. And so now she's in the middle of that. She finally told me the other day, she goes, man, Dad, you're right. I didn't realize this, being 16 years old and not having a driver's license, it's kind of the pits. And I'm like, well, I told you. And I said, but I can't do anything about that. I can't get you a license now till next September. And I said, so there's nothing we can do about that. So you're going to have your brother take you back and forth to your collegiate classes when you should have been driving yourself. See, you always have to give your children, when they're 16, 17, 18 years old, the responsibility to be responsible enough to realize that their actions have consequences. If you don't teach them that, then what ends up happening is a lot of times they don't learn it as children and they don't learn it as adults. And they kind of go through life. And the main reason, I'm going to say this again, and I'm going to get off this little soapbox I'm on, the main reason that people peak in high school as far as their lives, 15, 16, 17, 18 years old, they're the class president, or they're the football captain, or they're the lead cheerleader, or they're doing all these things, and they're having all this fun in high school. That's the very small percentage of people in high school. The vast majority of the people in high school kind of think like, well, I'm glad this is over with now. So here's the thing. But a lot of people peak in high school. And the reason that a lot of people peak in high school, and I've seen it so many times, is this. Now listen to me for a second. Is that they haven't made enough mistakes yet to ruin their lives. Their parents are still making all the decisions for them because they're not giving them the opportunity to fall on their face while they're in high school because they're micromanaging them. There's a problem with that. There's a big problem with that. Because guys, once your kids turn 18 years old, they don't have to listen to you anymore. They can do whatever they want to do. And if you haven't taught them to make decisions and be responsible for the actions they do and have to accept the consequences of their actions, they're going to think that they don't have to do that as adults. And I've seen it over and over and over again, Sharon, with our friends who've had kids who they've allowed them to do whatever they wanted to do. And when they turn 18 years old, they go completely berserk. And all of a sudden they think that there's no consequences. They end up in jail. They end up getting arrested. Or they end up flunking out of college. I've had so many friends, the kids are like basically brilliant. And they didn't have to take responsibility for anything they did in high school. They start college. The first semester in college, they flunk out. Or something horrible happens to them. Or the second semester, they flunk out. Or the state gets rid of their scholarship because their GPA drops below a 3.0. I've seen it over and over and over. It's better for your children to make the mistakes before they're 18. I'm going to repeat that. It's better for your children to make the mistakes before they're 18 because they can still recover from that. Once they start making them as an adult, it catches up to them very quickly. And the other thing is, really encourage your children not to get extended on credit because they're going to start sending them credit cards as soon as they're 18 years of age. They're going to give them college loans when they're 18 years of age that are going to want you to sign for along with your kids. Don't sign those loans. Tell your child you don't want to go to collegiate high school. You don't want to apply yourself. You don't want to do this with a local junior college for 2 years? I'm okay with that. I'm not paying. You're on your own. The first 2 years I was in college, I worked, stayed at home, cost almost nothing to go. And then my third year, I was at a scholarship house in Tallahassee. In my fourth year, my dad helped me. My fifth, I was in college from 74 to 70, from 73 to 1980. I was in college forever, including summer semesters. And now dad started helping me pay for stuff. You know, after I was through the junior college, because he saw that I was serious and I had good grades. And my dad, I couldn't say enough, he paid my way through like 4 college degrees. And so he's absolutely phenomenal. My father was. I love him so much to this day. May he rest in peace. But the thing about it is, guys, you don't have to go into debt. Now, if you've got the money or if you've set it aside for their college, that's one thing that's different. By the way, as the coup against Trump fails by the Democrats, the threat against his life rises. This is from Paul Craig Roberts. We've got to pray for Trump. The use of the prostitute media to deny Trump the Republican presidential nomination failed. The use of the prostitute media to deny Trump victory in the presidential electoral college failed. The vote recount failed. The effort to sway the electoral college failed again. The CIA report on Russia's alleged interference in the U.S. presidential election ordered by Obama is in process. Faked evidence is a hallmark of CIA operations. In their determination to seal Trump's ears against environmental concerns, a group of environmentalists plan to disrupt the inauguration. This in itself is of little consequence, but chaos presents opportunities for assassination. This is Paul Craig Roberts saying this. Trump himself seems to think he is in danger, according to MSNBC. Trump intends to supplement his Secret Service protection with private security. I hope he puts 100 people around him, Sharon. Evidence of the CIA and complicity in the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. The film shows Secret Service agents were ordered away from JFK's limousine immediately prior to his assassination. Trump, who is clearly seen as a threat by the military-industrial security complex, is not being paranoid. MSNBC implies that Trump's private security is to suppress protesters, as if government security forces have shown any compunction about suppressing protesters. Guys, I'm going to say this for Trump. He needs to watch the video along with you guys, and I've watched it multiple times. It's called From JFK to 9/11, It's a Rich Man's Trick. JFK to 9/11, It's a Rich Man's Trick. The CIA was complicit, as was George H. Bush, as was Lyndon Johnson, in the assassination of John F. Kennedy, according to this video. So guys, watch the video, decide for yourself. The CIA, hopefully now that we have a Christian being made the head of the CIA by Trump, hopefully he's going to clean this satanic group of weirdos up and get these guys out of here. Because think about this for a second. You can't be anywhere near the CIA or the president unless these guys screen you. You got to be screened. Everybody's got to be vetted. I mean, you're telling me that these CIA people don't know who the child pedophiles are in D.C. and who these people are who are doing this to children? Of course they know. They know who every one of them are because they've all been vetted. And a lot of the information is being used against them. But, guys, we really need to stay on course with Trump and pray for his continued protection. He's a good man. He needs to be protected. He's telling the truth. And, Sharon, the one thing about the New World Order is they absolutely hate it when you tell the truth. And here's the article I just quoted a second ago. We're almost out of time. More borrowers are losing Social Security benefits over old student loans. About 114,000 student loan borrowers over 50 years of age and older are losing out on the Social Security benefits because of an old student loan. And the number of borrowers over the age of 65 facing this predicament has increased 540% over the past decade. Sharon, thank you so much for being on with me today. I appreciate you being here. Okay, guys, I want to thank you, and I want to let you guys know that I love you. I appreciate you. Thank you for getting your vitamins from Health Masters. Thank you for getting your multiple vitamins from Health Masters. We all use multiple vitamins, and when you buy those from Health Masters, it makes a huge difference to us. It really does. I'm looking forward to being on the Hagman Show tonight, and I want to thank you guys so much for supporting us and supporting the Hagmans and supporting Dave Hodges and Sheila Zawinski and all of us, because we're all working together kind of like as a loosely knit team to try to bring you the truth to the best of our abilities. I love you guys. I appreciate you so much. I want to wish you guys a wonderful, wonderful Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year. I'm planning on being back with you again tomorrow live, but if I'm not back live, we'll have a good show for you playing tomorrow. But tonight I'll be on with Doug, so I'm looking forward to you guys listening to that show too. And thanks for the support. And just thanks for being here. God bless you guys. Bye-bye.